Hey, it's Sam Alai here, founder of My Legal Academy, where we help lawyers scale and automate their law firms so they could sign up more clients and reclaim their precious time. If you're looking to grow your practice while working less, click the link in the show notes to book a free call to discover a radically different way to grow your law firm. Enjoy the episode.
Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 423 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyrant, your host out here on the East Coast with my good friend and buddy Sam Malai there in LA. Sam, how are you doing today?
Very good. Excited to talk about today's episode. We got a pretty interesting topic. Let's have some fun with it.
Yeah, because I resemble this remark, I think, you know, so it works for me.
No, not at all. Natalie, God bless. Natalie, and you're an amazing lawyer. We also thank God that very successful in life and in business.
So we're going to talk today about why are the best lawyers not always the most successful. And I'll start it off here, Sam. Number one, oftentimes it's because they're not learning the business side of law. And this was really important to me. This is, frankly, why I started this podcast now 8.5 years ago with the tagline, what they didn't teach us about running a business in law school, which frankly is just about everything. For many years, I was on my soapbox saying that law schools were committing legal malpractice by churning out attorneys whose only opportunity was going to be to open their own practice for whatever reason, the market, the economy, and so on and so forth, but hadn't prepared them for what it takes to run a business. And the reality is that you can be a great attorney, you can have all the legal skills, but if you're trying to run a business, you better be a good businessman or a great businessman. And that's even more important sometimes than your legal skills. I often tell folks, look, I'm not the most knowledgeable attorney. I'm not the brightest bulb in the chandelier, but I know how to run a business and I know how to relate with people. And in my area of practice, that those are the important characteristics. And so if you want to be successful, you're going to have to learn how a law firm is, in fact, from start to finish, a business, just like any other business. Attorneys are fond of saying, but the law is different. I'm not selling widgets. Well, no, you're not selling widgets, but the principles behind a business that's very successful in selling widgets are the same principles that you have to lob onto and successfully demonstrate.
Neil, can we blame anybody or anything on this? That lawyers are not really prepped in the business side of law?
Well, I've always felt that law schools in particular were a big culprit here. Now, I will say, since I graduated in the last 5-8 years or so, more and more schools are adding at least something to do with running a business, a law firm. But it's not the same. Like, for instance, if you go to law school and say, well, I'm going to focus on criminal defense. You're going to focus on criminal defense all the way through your 3 or 4 years in law school. But if you say, go into law school with the understanding that I know I'm going to start my own law practice, I want a curriculum that also helps me run the business when I graduate from law school. So I think that was number one. Number two, many, many bar associations were slow to recognize the business side of a law practice is equally important, if not more important, than the legal side of law practice. Now, again, like law schools, in my opinion, that's changing. Ironically, from the get-go, the entities that were most responsive to the need for teaching lawyers how to run a business was private industry, private companies, and other successful attorneys who created companies around the teaching platform, such as My Legal Academy, light years ahead of bar associations and law firms. So that hasn't changed. I still think the private community is way further ahead in providing those resources and that education.
For sure. And I definitely, you know, I think it's the responsibility of the law firms to be able to do that. You know, I was lucky enough, my third year, there was a class called, I actually just looked it up, called Small Law Practice Management.
Yeah.
And it was just one class. It was only 2 credits. So it wasn't that many hours in a week. I think it was like 2 hours a week or something like that.
Yeah, probably that.
And it changed a lot of things for me. One is actually showed me that it's possible. One of the main, I think that like the final or the main project was to create a business plan for launching a law firm. And the business plan I started to this day was called Mobile Law, which actually ended up being the name of my first law firm. It helped me kind of put together, go to read good books, and I still have the books I'm looking at right now. The book is called How to Start and Build a Law Practice, kind of like my first book of kind of exposed me to this world. It helped me figure out what tools do I need, you know, what type of team I might possibly need in the future, what resources I need, you know, LexisNexis, all that kind of stuff. And it kind of opened up my eyes, and just thinking the big picture is like just showing that it's possible. And just one simple class is all it took to potentially change the trajectory of a young law student's career for the rest of their life. And that was just happens to be a class, elective class that you don't necessarily need to take. Well, imagine maybe the changes would be maybe potentially make that mandatory. No, not everybody needs to start a law firm, but at least expose them to it, you know, make it mandatory, maybe make it provide more classes, maybe provide deeper classes or specialized classes. There's so many things that these law schools can do to really open up people's horizons.
I would have loved to have seen a different class for every semester for the whole 3 to 4 years that you're in there that focuses on small and solo law firm management. There's plenty of material to go over and to dovetail with the legal aspects of providing those services. And I think law schools do a terrible disservice to their students. They graduate, you know, with this enormous amount of debt in many cases, and sadly, without some of the skills necessary to survive. Like I said, it was a big reason why I started the podcast.
Yeah, and I'm going to share something very important. I went back to my law school last year, and I spoke a couple of times at different events in my Southwestern law school. And one of the times I was there, a student came to me. I believe it was in his third year. And he came to me, he's like, "Hey, Sam, trying to figure things out, what I'm going to do post-bar. Do you think, you know, I should continue working for somebody, or do you think I should just go on my own if I'm already considering doing that?" And I stressed to him that no, if you're actually thinking about actually doing it, then no, jump the gun as soon as you get the opportunity to go launch your law firm. And I explained the reasons just to give a short gist. And I think we should actually have an episode to this, because I know just from our comments and emails that I get, there's a lot of young people that listen to us. If you think that you're going to eventually open up a law firm, the short answer is go launch it right away as soon as you can, for multiple reasons. But one of the main reasons is you want to build your equity early, and that really matters. Just pure mathematical equation of this is if you launch your law firm in 2025, the equity that you have in 2030, let's just say is you're 5 years in, the equity is worth, let's say, $3 million. Versus if you launch your law firm in 2030, your equity is $10,000. So you're $3 million ahead. What changed? You're still launched, you know, you launched your law firm, but just because of the timing, it's a $3 million difference. So,
and you didn't make up the difference in the salary that you were earning at the firm that you were working at.
Not at all. Yeah, exactly. So I think we should probably, you know, dedicate the whole episode too, because there's a lot more to be discussed here. But
A lot. Let's move on to number two.
Let's go to number two, which is not understanding marketing in a saturated space. Neil, it's never been easier to start a law firm, but it's never been harder to grow a law firm. It's very easy. Let's talk about the easy part, right? It's very easy to create a website, create your Google My Business, you know, get some directory listings, like, you know, open up your Yelp account. Do those fundamental kind of stuff, right? Anybody can do it with a couple of YouTube videos and maybe a couple of resources like Lawyer Club to help you get there. However, growing a law firm these days has gotten tougher. Don't believe me? Take it from somebody who does this for a living, and not just in a quantity of competition, but also the quality of the competition is getting smarter and smarter. There, people are using more data, more AI, more ChatGPT, more resources, more money, more technology to be able to do what they do. And, you know, if you're going to come in and think you're going to compete with the big boys and, you know, start a PI law firm in California and all the stuff that I hear about on a weekly basis, Neil, man, you're in for a rude awakening. So that means what this is ultimately, I'm not just saying this to make anybody feel bad, but it means that you got to focus more on marketing because, you know, as we said from point number one, you got to understand how the business of law works. And when it comes to the business of law, the sect that matters the most from that, Neil, is the marketing part, because you cannot have a law firm unless if you have clients, and you can't have clients until you learn how to generate clients. So ultimately, it will come down to just you being the success of your law firm depends on how well can you generate clients. You could be the best lawyer. You could be have all the resources. You could have Lexis, and you could be an expert on the, all the backend stuff. But if you don't know how to generate clients and do, you know, and have really good marketing, then unfortunately, you're just going to be a good lawyer with, you know, not a successful law firm. So lean into the marketing early. And even if you're late, lean into it. Things become more and more saturated and more competitive over time. The sooner that you lean into it and the more that you let go of your ego and you learn from the wizards of the people who have figured things out, then the more likely you are to succeed quicker.
Couldn't say it better myself.
Point number three, Neil, I'll let you take this one, which is staying. Yeah, go ahead.
So staying in your comfort zone and not taking enough risk. And this, again, I've said this a couple times now, you know, lawyers are particularly risk adverse. They are so conservative in their approach to everything we do. And to some degree, that's understandable because, you know, you don't want to take risk when it comes to say, oh, I don't know, your client's freedom, right? You don't want to be experimenting there. So we're conditioned, we're trained, we're taught to be risk averse. And that's not consistent with creating a great practice. You have to take risk. And I think one of the things that you and I, Sam, have in common is that we didn't necessarily identify this unknown as being a risk that we were about to take. We viewed it as a challenge, and that we were up for the challenge, and that we were going to adapt and adopt whatever was necessary in order to overcome that challenge. And so therefore, we're taking a calculated risk. It's something that we have at least given some thought to and some idea of how we're going to manage the process. But you have to put yourself out there. You have to step off that plank, as I like to say, and make, you know, the moves that are necessary to get moving. And if you're always hanging back and playing defense and playing it safe, you're never going to move forward. You have to take some risk.
And getting out of your comfort zone, right, Neil?
Yeah.
It's kind of boring to be in your comfort zone. Again, life is short. Let's spice it up a little bit. What I've seen, Neil, is that technology and competition increases variance. What that means is there's more chaos in the world. I mean, there's more chaos. You might want to look into game theory. This is like way out there. But let me run with this. When there's more chaos in the world, game theory dictates that you got to be more active. Because if the world is chaotic and you're stagnant, well, you're going to be, the chaos is going to override the stagnant. So you gotta, basically, it just means that you cannot play it safe anymore. You cannot be stagnant anymore. Maybe back in the day, sure, maybe the strategy could be, you know, slow and steady wins the race. But fortunately, the reality is slow and steady does not win the race anymore. Fast and not steady wins the race. And a quote that I actually put up as an affirmation for myself is the biggest risk is not taking a risk. The biggest risk is not taking a risk. Again, these days, because of the competition and technology and AI coming to the space, you cannot no longer just sit on your hands and just think, let things happen. You got to take control and take some risks. And Neil, you shared calculated risk is the way to go. We don't just say, go do things. No, you got to take some data, get some insights, be resourceful, ask around, join communities, ask ChatGPT, join Facebook groups, take whatever information you can get, decipher it in your head, and make some calculated risk. Hey, I've been hearing more about this, or I see people all doing this, so that means I should do this. And then something that's also been something that's come to mind for me is taking decisive action. Decisive. Not being in this middle decision stage. I don't know, should I or not. Be decisive in whatever you do. Even if it's decisive in the wrong direction, that's still better than in no direction. So take bold risks, calculate risks, and be decisive with whatever you do.
Yeah, one of the things I think that you and I both did really, both of us embraced technology. And for me, that was back, you know, before the cloud, that was before remote commuting interactions. And so I took the risk, but I always knew that my understanding of technology coming from an IT background was going to give me an advantage to overcome that risk. You did the same thing. You embraced technology, emerging technologies was abandoned. You were cutting edge on so many things. And that's a way of reducing that risk. The more you understand how technology can leverage your skills and your abilities, the less risky, you know, movement will be.
Let's go to point number four of why are the best lawyers not always the most successful, Neil, is being introverted or extroverted when balance is needed. Everybody's on this kind of gradient from introverted to extroverted. From what I've seen, actually, I should look at the data, like what percentage of people are usually introverted versus extroverted. From what I remember, I think it was 1/4 are introverted, but let's see. But Neil, what are you? Are you an introvert or extrovert?
I'm way extroverted. On that bell curve, I'm all the way to the right.
Nice. I'm more on the other side. I'm more on the introverted side. And it seems like ChatGPT is sharing with us that some studies indicate that around 30 to 50% of people identify as introverts, while others show the majority of people may have a mix of introverted and extroverted traits, a concept known as being ambiverted. And I know a lot of people probably fall within that middle kind of ground, being a mix of both. This means most people fall somewhere between pure introversion and extroversion. However, the exact percentage can depend on how introversion and extroversion are defined and measured in various psychological studies. But the point of the lesson is, Neil, is that you cannot, if you're an introvert, you cannot just be an introvert in business. God favors the bold, and God wants you to be a well-rounded person. That's why I think one of the reasons why God wants you to get married is so that you have somebody complementary who is different from you, who will rub off on you and make you a better, wholesome, well-rounded person. And that's, guess what? That same drive and those same reasons also apply in business. If you just come into a business and you just play who you are and where your comfort zone is as the introverted person, you're going to struggle versus somebody who's going to play the more well-rounded approach that they'll know when to be an extrovert and when to be an introvert and be able to play both roles when the time calls for those two characteristics. I'm very conscious that I'm an introvert, and that means I've leaned in the past couple of years, I've leaned more into extroverted roles on purpose, placed myself in situations where I never could have imagined, Neil, like just said, like a perfect example in my head, 10 years ago, I could have never imagined having a conference for lawyers. We had a conference for lawyers last year called MLA Live 2023. Just looking back, you know, thinking about those moments where I'm on stage and I'm coming on stage and I'm interacting with people and they're saying hi and I'm saying going there, like that whole thing. I was like, are you serious? Like, that's me. But it was, I think I attribute that to accepting myself, not being ashamed by it, but also leaning towards the other side too and being okay with it too and not, you know, feeling shamed or embarrassed or uncomfortable if I have to sometimes be the other side. Neil, how's this worked out in your life, this whole introvert versus extrovert fight?
Yeah, what I found is that, as you said, I think balance is the right perspective. Too much of my extrovertism can, you know, can be off-putting or unproductive. And I think I'm best and my firm is best when we show some balance. There are times when being introverted and being introspective are more important than being outgoing and extroverted. You know, I do estate planning and, you know, it's brought home to me this past weekend when we had to do an estate plan for a young woman who sadly is not going to be with us much longer. And, you know, going into that environment in my usual extroverted way and, you know, full of energy and personalities was not going to be helpful to the client or the situation we were addressing. So I had to take kind of that other approach, that more sensitive, introverted approach. And so finding that balance in the right spots, in the right moments, you know, is important. And I think that's what allows you to address a wide spectrum of issues and challenges and grow within them.
Something that I've noticed, Neil, from introverts, I could spot an introvert when I look at their social media. You know, when people join our program, I get their name texted to me as soon as somebody joins. And right away, I go look them up on social media.
Sure.
To see what they're like. Good news is, we were so similar. A lot of people that join our program are very similar to each other. They're usually into self-development. They're usually family-oriented, growth-oriented, kind of like just good, well-rounded people. So that's a cool, kind of cool part. But something I've noticed from introverted people is that they're kind of hidden when they hide their life. There's good reasons, you know, to be private. I attest to that. I think that's very good. But at the same time, just know if you have a law firm, these days, people are going to look you up. And if you're completely hidden from a lot of social media accounts, that causes friction and that causes not just missed opportunities, but also creates some rifts to help them decide.
It's a doubt.
Yeah, it's a doubt. It creates unclarity, unknown. Who is this person? Is this person real? Can I trust them? So just make sure, for my fellow introverts, fill out your social media profiles, your LinkedIn's, at least your LinkedIn, at least your website about me section, and maybe Facebook and Instagram if you happen to get to it.
You know, it reminds me of in the beginning where so many people said, you know, keep your social media private from your work accounts, your LinkedIn and your website and that kind of thing. I never really bought into that because I always felt like you can't separate your being into two entities, that you were all a holistic whole. And so, and I just kind of leaned in on that. And one of the things I did, like on my website, on my About Me page, I let all about my background, how law was my fourth career, and, you know, my role as a husband and as a father and as a coach and that kind of thing. I didn't get down to my resume, as we were talking about in the last episode, till the bottom of the page. And I can't tell you how many people have said that resonated with them, getting to know the person as a whole. So if you are introverted to the point where you're not allowing people to see the whole person that you really are, I think, you know, you might want to take a look at that and see if there's more balance that you can achieve.
Genius. Neil, you leaned towards that KLT that we always talk about, that know, like, and trust. Smart. Yeah. I'm sure your conversion rates are much, much, much higher than people who don't have those things on their website. Number five is a very important one. I don't know why we left it as the last one, Neil, is failing to
keep up. Because you wanted to finish with a bang, Sam.
Oh, yeah. Failing to keep up with changing industries, trends, and tech innovation.
I feel like this is lobbing a softball into Shoatani's wheelhouse here. Then you're going to turn on it and knock this one out of the park.
What's Darwin's theory, Neil?
Darwin's theory?
Yeah.
The weak shall fail and the strongest survive.
Yep. The ones who adapt basically survive, I think, is the gist of it. Yeah. Right? It's not the strongest to survive. It's the ones
that adapt. Yep.
It was actually, I remember, it was something that I saw yesterday that triggered this Darwin's theory. And I realized this Darwin's theory, I explained this on one of my first webinars that I did for lawyers. I try to explain this, like, listen, it's not the best lawyer or the blah, blah, you know, best lawyer who's going to win here. It's the lawyer that adapts is the lawyer that's going to do well for the next 10 years. And now that I'm 10 years in, I'm like, oh man, that's been a good secret sauce. You know, that's still very important, even going forward. So if you're looking to thrive and do well, you got to adapt. And if you're just going to be sitting there and saying, again, blaming people, blaming trends, talking shit about TikTok and this and that, it's a losing mindset. Instead, you got to be open-minded and play the game, because the game is playing, and you got to, if you want to thrive, you got to play the game. I don't like it, Neil. Sometimes we're like, damn it, did the trend already change? And I don't feel like doing TikTok reels or whatever I got to do to grind it. But, you know, that's what it takes. So at some point, you got to make a decision. Like, do I, you know, do I want to adapt and do things that are outside my comfort zone? Or I'm just going to sit there in my hands and say it is what it is.
And I think the difference nowadays, it's changing so rapidly. You know, back in the day, the pace of innovation was much slower and you could keep up with it. And I think what frustrates some people right now is that it seems to be moving faster and faster and faster every year, every quarter. And unfortunately, that is reality. Technology, the pace of evolution in technology does not slow down. It never slows down. It goes up exponentially. And so you can mitigate that risk, as we said before, to some degree by focusing on some of the core elements of the technology that you're going to use. But at the end of the day, you've got to keep pace, because what I've seen, what you've seen, Sam, is that the newer breed of attorney, they've come up with this technology since grade school, and they've adapted along the way, and they're going to continue to adapt. And if you want to survive, you're going to have to adapt with them.
Good news, Neil, for our listeners is we're trying to, and with this podcast, and this show, we're trying to be that source of the new trend, early adoption, calling it out as it is, be very transparent and kind of share with you what's working now. I'm on the frontier of that. Again, something that I realized is my competitive advantage. I'm just going to continue leaning on it. Neil, I happen to be one of the few people who was at last week's Tesla 1010 release thing. That was like literally like the epitome of the early adopters. I was there. It was so cool. You know, leaning towards autonomous cars and Optimus robots, all that stuff. And I'm going to
continue. I saw that.
Yeah. It's going to be a promise to myself and to the world that I'm always going to lean into that. It probably sucks for my wife who has to deal with, you know, these random things that I got to do to be able to stay on these top of these trends. But I think she's accepted and realized that's who I am. And she, you know, she's pretty open to those, letting me do those things. And as our loyal listeners, I promise that I'll share those insights with you so that you'll stay ahead of the trend and ride the wave with us.
Get some of that work done on your behalf.
Yeah. All right. Pretty good episode. It always is. But let's just do a quick little recap. The why the best lawyers are not always the most successful is, number one, not learning the business side of law. Number two is the importance of leaning into learning how to generate clients and marketing in a very saturated market that we actually happen to be in. Number three is kind of getting out of your comfort zone and taking more risks. The biggest risk is not taking a risk is basically the gist of it. Number four, staying well-balanced when it comes to being an introvert and extrovert. Sometimes you got to lean into the other side to do well. And number five, Darwin's theory. The ones that are going to survive are the ones that are more likely to adapt. So just make sure to stay on top of this trend and make sure to continue listening to these podcasts, as we're going to be the source of that truth for you. Neil, any last words?
No, I would just say that if you found value in anything that we've had to share today, that you make sure that you in turn share it with another individual, whether it's another attorney, colleague, business person. You know, we have a lot of non-lawyers that listen to this podcast, because the value that Sam is offering, it translates to other types of professional services. So don't think you just can only share this with your lawyer friends. Share it with your chiropractors and your doctors and your dentists, and you'd be surprised at how many will be receptive to that. And if you help one person, you help improve the world.
Amazing. So let me just clarify this. Our company used to be called Legal Funnel, because at the time, the whole breakthrough was a virtual law firm. And then the vehicle for getting more clients was funnels. So pretty good name, Legal Funnel. And at that point, the focus was mostly client generation. And then 2 or 3 years in, I realized that there's more than client generation. There's also, you know, hiring, virtual team, numbers, KPIs, automations, CRMs, productivity, and a lot more. So we rebranded to My Legal Academy. And then in My Legal Academy, we created our flagship program called Growth Track that we still have today. So that is still open. It's an evergreen offer that helps lawyers grow and automate their law firms. Pretty successful. We get a good, consistent number of clients every single month. But our value prop is our law firm growth implementers. These are people who are specialists at very specific things. Let's just say when it comes to client generation, we have people who use our recipes when it comes to creating ads for generating clients for lawyers. When it comes to automations, we have experts who set up the CRM for you and set up the automations for you. We have integration experts. We have intake experts who come and help you, you know, set up more clients. And anything you could possibly think about, productivity, whatever that is, we provide all the resources and then we provide all the right people to help you implement all these things. We'll see you in the next episode. We have the next two lined up. Should we just tease it? The next episode will be what's wrong with your marketing.
Yeah.
All right. We'll see you in the next episode. Thank you so much.
Take care, Ev.
Thanks for listening to The Law Entrepreneur. If you found value in the show, please rate, review, and subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you're listening. And don't forget to share the episode with a friend. It could help transform their life. To get access to a treasure trove of exclusive free resources for lawyers, go to joinlawyerclub.com. Again, that's joinlawyerclub.com. We'll see you on the next episode.